Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Now, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. Yes, that's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're so glad to have you back. And while some radio hosts on some radio stations may claim that they're broadcasting from deep within the bowels of whatever, one building or another, here at the Weekly Worldview, we are actually broadcasting from deep within the bowels of the McBurney compound. We're coming to you, in fact, from the brand new Worldview Studios, recently constructed after a lot of research and a massive amount of work, here in the boiler room at the McBurney compound, which just happens to be the deadest place in the house as far as sound goes. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Not only do we get to do the Weekly Worldview, and not only do I get to hang out with my extremely attractive audio engineer, but we get to look at one of the most sophisticated hot water heating systems, well, that we've ever seen here in the boiler room at the Weekly Worldview compound. And we're so glad to have you with us. It should be a good time. We had a great time at Denver Bible Church this morning as I preached the sermon, as a matter of fact, on thankfulness. And looking around here at the new McBurney/Worldview compound, we realize we've got an awful lot to be thankful about. We've got this great spread, this awesome studio, and a couple of goats, and 35 acres for the kids to run around. They're in paradise. I mean, it's just been fantastic. The only thing that could make it better would be to start shooting some guns. And as soon as we can get them, as soon as we can find them in the garage, they're buried along with a lot of other stuff that we apparently don't need too badly. They're buried out there, and we're going to go shoot some guns, and we're going to cull the herd of coyotes and wolves that may be lurking out here on the McBurney property, so that we can protect our goats. And I'll be inviting select members of the listening audience out to shoot guns here in the not too distant future. If you're in the Denver metropolitan area and you feel the need to shoot some coyotes, well, we'll be having some coyote shooting parties in the not-too-distant future.
What's up? We haven't even seen one.
Well, we saw that dead wolf on the side of the road on the way home today.
Yeah, but it was,
that was
on
scary.
I-70.
That was on I-70. But I hear the coyotes at night, you see.
Okay.
You go outside, and it's eerie. It's as if they're just waiting to pounce. And those goats, they're helpless. And they're gorgeous. And the girls are having just a wonderful time with them. And we're thankful to God for all the manifold blessings that he has poured out upon us. But we've got to get to the news of the day, of the week, as a matter of fact. And let's start a report from NBC in New York about a man out in California. This 35-year-old fella, he was in San Francisco's Knob Hill neighborhood. And he was walking on Broadway Street last week when two men approached him and invited him to smoke some weed with them. Yes, that's how the NBC reporter writes it. He invited him to smoke some weed with them, dude. Well, the man took them up on their offer. They went to an apartment, and they smoked some dope. Later, the man says he got hot and decided to take his jacket and pants off, which, I mean, if you've hung out in San Francisco for any amount of time, you just know that any time you're in the company of people who dwell in San Francisco, they might just take off their pants. And this fella did take off his pants. Well, he got up to go to the bathroom at some point through the smoky haze, and the other two men stole his clothing, punched him in the face, took his valuables, and absconded, apparently, with the marijuana as well. He made a report to the police. He refused medical treatment. The police say they have not made any arrests, and they have not expressed much interest in making any arrests in this particular case. So for all you young people out there, You know that we're against the legalization of marijuana and against the smoking of marijuana. And even if it doesn't cause any serious damage in your life right at that moment, it can be extremely embarrassing and make you look like a moron. Why do you think they call it dope, right? So there you have it. Don't be smoking dope, because at the very least, you look like an idiot. Now, let's move from that, appropriately enough, into the science, really, file, where astronomers believe mysterious signals that had previously been dismissed as stellar bursts are coming from an Earth-like planet. Yes, this Earth-like planet is believed to be the first planet outside our solar system to inhabit what they call the Goldilocks zone around its star. And if you've listened to the Weekly Worldview, you know that the Goldilocks zone is a zone that scientists say it's not too hot and it's not too cold for life. And the planet may be able to sustain life. Now, to find this planet, which is called Gliese 581d, University of California, Santa Cruz astronomers originally looked for subtle changes in the light emanating from the star. Subtle changes in the light caused by the gravity of an orbiting planet tugging back and forth on the star. And now I think that's pretty interesting, because I think that's completely logical, that the light would be distorted as a planet orbits. And even though you can't technically see the planet, you can know that it's there. And once you know that it's there, you can study it. And that's pretty cool. Now, at the time of its discovery, you'll remember that the discovery of Earth-like planets was all in the news and had captured the public's attention. This was 2010, and it was reported here on the Weekly Worldview. Every time one of these planets was in the news, we reported on it. And for a while, it seemed like there were hundreds of planets that are pretty much just like Earth out there, is how the mainstream media reported it. The mainstream media, by the way, being members of the media who probably hang out in Knob Hill, take off their pants, and smoke dope with long-haired hippie types out in San Francisco. That's just one of the many medications that the mainstream media takes part of. But they were reporting it as if we were about to stumble over half a dozen planets inhabited by advanced civilizations. That's the impression they left. Well, it turns out this is the very first one, initially discovered in 2010. And even though the existence of the planet is still theoretical, and the mysterious signals, well, they actually have no idea what they are or where they're coming from. But many members of the educational establishment are extremely excited about it. In fact, the Australian Science Minister organized 20,000 users of Twitter to send messages toward the distant solar system. A documentary maker and a social networking site called Bebo used a radio telescope in Ukraine to send a powerful, focused beam of information containing 500 messages from the public in the form of radio waves out in the direction of Gliese 581. And I can just imagine if there are people on a Gliese 581, how excited they must be to find out what someone in San Antonio had for breakfast. You know, it's stuff that people post on. I mean, if they actually get a load of what we post on our social media sites, they may not want to talk with us. They may think that we're a bit self-absorbed and annoying. So this is no way to start. But what I find interesting about the fact that just a couple of events that are really precarious and questionable as to what's going on here, whether the planet exists, where the mysterious signals are coming from. Social networking people, college age type people are all excited to send them messages because they think there might be intelligent life out there. Yet they can look at an ultrasound or hear the beating heart of a baby in the womb and deny that it's a person. I find that ironic, and sickeningly ironic, by the way. I find that to be an example of what the Bible says about people who are proud and who will strain out a gnat yet swallow a camel whole In this case, Gliese 581D, and the mysterious signals are the camel that they swallow whole. And the child in the womb with a beating heart is the child that they, is the gnat that they strain out. Let's see. We've got more from the, here, one more from the science. Really? File. Yes, this is from National Geographic Online. An international team of astronomers has discovered a galaxy that should not exist. And they do this all the time. If you get an opportunity to read the literature, peer-reviewed, published by Big Bang cosmologists, old Earth evolutionists, and all of that, you'll find that they're always finding things that shouldn't exist, things that contradict their various theories, and they've found another one. The problem with this particular galaxy is while the tiny galaxy dates from just 700 million years or so after the Big Bang, it's far more dusty than something this young and small has any right to be. Yes, a University of Arizona expert on galaxy formation, that's what he says to impress the freshman girls. I'm an expert on galaxy formation. Yeah, come on up to the lab, these people. Anyway, this University of Arizona expert on galaxy formation says it's surprising. Yes, because we all know that the cosmos started out with no dust at all. I mean, we all know that. In the aftermath of the Big Bang, the universe consisted only of hydrogen and helium gas. Of course, along with dark matter. But that's invisible. Unquote. That's a university professor. First of all, how does he know the universe started with no dust? Now, I read the Bible. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void. Darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. God said, let there be light. Now, I think there was dust. I think there was matter. That's God creating matter. And when he said light, that's God. When God said, let there be light, that's when God pulled the matter together. And if you know how light works, it produced a lot of light as he formed all the things in the universe. But this expert says there was no dust. And, the astronomers say that this dusty galaxy, which is allegedly young but has all this dust, inexplicably, the dusty galaxy is just one of the recent surprises astronomers have found. One such astronomer says, we've had this picture of the early universe, but it's clear that we really don't know what's going on. And I couldn't agree more with that. He says the gas in the post-Big Bang universe condensed to form the first stars, which formed... Oh, this isn't even a quote. This is what the reporter writes in the story, and he writes it as if it's fact. The gas in the post-Big Bang universe, says the reporter, condensed, he alleges, with no evidence at all, to form the first stars, which forged heavier elements, including carbon, silicon, and oxygen, and then died and released those elements into space. It was from these that the first particles of dust formed, says the reporter matter-of-factly. So this stuff is not presented in the media or in the government schools as a theory. It's only when creationists challenge Big Bang cosmologists and old Earth evolutionists, it's only when we challenge them that they say, well, it's only a theory, and theories change all the time. But if you read the news media, and you read what's being presented to young, impressionable minds in the government schools, it's presented just the way this reporter presented it in this story from National Geographic. It's presented as settled science, and it's presented as a fact, when in fact it really is just a theory, and it's a pretty shaky theory at that, I might add. But at the end of the article, we have, the reporter says, the very early universe doesn't make a lot of sense at the moment, but that's almost certainly going to change. Almost certainly going to change? Okay. Study English much? Okay, whatever. Anyway, I don't want to be nitpicky about his grammar, but, I mean, his lack of grammatical intelligence indicates a lack of scientific knowledge as well, I think. And that's about par for the course when we delve into the science, really, file. It's the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you all with us as we delve even further, deeper, if that's possible, into the science. Really? File? Yes, for this, we go to Newsbusters, newsbusters.org. They're reporting on, reportage from the 1970s. They say March 4th this year, Boston was just 2 inches away from hitting an all-time record for snow. It's a reality more in keeping with media warnings from the 1970s than arguments about global warming today. That's right. And then they go on to remind us of something that I believe I have reminded the listening audience about before. And that is the fact that back in 1972, 1973, we were being warned about the coming global ice age. And it's been documented now by none other than, or as delivered by none other than Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America in the 1970s. My family used to watch Walter Cronkite every night at 6 o'clock. Every weeknight, we watched Walter Cronkite to get the news. And in 1972, Newsbusters reports that Cronkite cited scientists' predictions that there was a new ice age coming. Yes, while the weather may be just a little colder in the immediate years to come, the full extent of the new ice age won't be reached for another 10,000 years. And even then, it won't be as bad as the last ice age 60,000 years ago. Back then, New York, Cincinnati, and St. Louis were under 5,000 feet of ice. And that's the way it was 60,000 years ago, said Walter. And everybody believed the guy. Because what did we know back then? I mean, I was only six. And I looked at him a little cockeyed. I was like, what? I just learned in Sunday school that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days just a few thousand years ago. Here's this guy talking about Cincinnati under 5,000 feet of ice 60,000 years ago. I remember I had questions back then, or at least I tell myself that's what I remember. I don't know. I'm not sure what I remember from 1972. But Newsbusters reports that the late Walter Cronkite is considered a legendary journalist and a producer of an upcoming global warming documentary called Climate Hustle, says global warming activists have claimed for years that the 1970s global cooling scare never existed. They have tried to erase the inconvenient history, which ironically blamed extreme weather like tornadoes, droughts, record cold, and blizzards on global cooling. And they have been able to erase that to some degree because people are so stupid anymore. Nobody really knows anything about history. But I remember, even though I was only six, and I thank the folks over at Newsbusters and the producers of this new documentary called Climate Hustle. Is there someone I can give credit to here? Well, I don't have time. Anyway, you can check it out online. Well, now, this archived footage of Walter Cronkite has been unveiled by the folks producing Climate Hustle, and that should be just a load of fun to watch. Now, the scientist that Cronkite cited, by the way, one of the scientists actually founded the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia in Great Britain, which as of late has been exposed as a complete fraud. Now, it appears that this scientist was not a fraud, but the CRU at the University of East Anglia was hijacked by a bunch of socialist maniacs who basically want to control every bit of what you and I do and accumulate to themselves more and more political power by scaring the kids about the climate. And that's just wrong. And we're against it. You know what else we're against here? Emily's List. Yes. So we delve now into the politics file. And there was a big gala for Emily's List to raise money so that they can kill poor black babies. That's what Emily's List specializes in. They subsidize poor minority women so that these rich white liberals can kill their kids. The rich white liberals fund the murder of poor black children. And they have a gala every year to celebrate and throw glitter on each other. and tell each other how wonderful they are, if you can believe this. Yes. Well, at the Emily's List Gala last week, Al Franken appeared, Senator Al Franken, and the first thing he did was apologize. He said, first of all, I apologize for being a guy. At which eyebrows were raised, and nobody was really sure. He was asked to prove he was a guy, and it turns out he was unable to do so. And so that's what happened over there at the Emily's List Gala. Yeah, Emily's List specializes in funding Democrat leftist politicians who set up programs, have set up a program that has basically been a holocaust against the minority and poor community. The minority and poor communities in America, and they celebrate one another as if they're heroes. And it's disgusting, and it is appropriate that Al Franken would appear and be challenged on his masculinity. Yeah. At least he was challenged here on the Weekly Worldview regarding his masculinity. But there is one person whose masculinity we do not doubt, and that is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's one of the most manly women I've ever seen. Well, she's in the news this week. I got this from CNS News. This comes to us out of the personhood file at the Weekly Worldview. Mr. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat from Florida, is urging Secretary of State John Kerry to look into what she says is the misapplication of the 42-year-old law that bans U.S. foreign aid from being spent on abortions. Yes, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is upset that America is not paying for more abortions in the third world. Why are we not killing more third world minority children? Debbie Wasserman Schultz is outraged. Her request of John Kerry comes at a time when Planned Parenthood is pressing President Obama to change the way the amendment is implemented, arguing that the Helms Amendment has been applied or is being applied as a total ban on abortion, even in cases of rape and incest and the life of the mother. Yeah, just give us that. Rape, incest, life of the mother. You give us that and we'll get everything we want. Cecile Richards, another manly woman, whose masculinity we don't doubt. I mean, after all, she's basically insisted that women, in order to be full women, well, they basically need to act like men and be able to go out and have sex with whoever they want, whenever they want. And if they have an inconvenient pregnancy, they should be able to terminate. Well, Cecile Richards says, quote, ultimately, we must get rid of the Helms Amendment entirely. We can't wait to help women who have been raped or been victims of incest or those facing life-threatening pregnancies. So Cecile Richards really puts the lie to, well, number one, the whole Helms Amendment and the fact that people in the government think they can shuffle money around and escape guilt for the children that are killed with the money that our government gives to the International Planned Parenthood. It doesn't matter. If you give money to Planned Parenthood International and any babies are killed, well, you share in the guilt. I don't care if you gave the money to buy tea for office workers. Then you bear the guilt. So the Republicans and Jesse Helms and all the others who allowed abortion to become legal, but they decided they could regulate it and control it and they could absolve themselves of any guilt, well, they were just lying to themselves and to you and I. But the thing about the full-throated abortionists like Cecile Richards and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is that if there's one baby they can't kill, they go ballistic. They are outraged if they are prevented from killing even one innocent minority poor child. They are outraged, and they want to be able to kill anyone and everyone they please. And if they they're annoyed by the paperwork. It's just getting annoying having to shuffle the paper and the money. And now that they've got Barry Ho in office, they know that he's just the guy to do it. Now, they claim that they're going to seek congressional action in order to overturn the Helms Amendment. But the funny thing is, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is calling on the Secretary of State, John Kerry, who is a member of the executive branch of government and not the legislative branch, which means, as we can all guess, that if Debbie doesn't get her way, Debbie's going to get Barry to do it. That's right. He's got a pen and a phone. And he'll make it legal. Jesse Helms. Isn't he dead, for crying out loud? Why are we still following his amendment? Anyway, so there we have it from the impersonate file. And so it's not hard to understand that the only way to stop the fanatical killers of the next generation, which is what these people are, those of you who are tolerant and pro-choice and you think you're very progressive and you're good people because you support a woman's choice. Well, it's actually murder, and there's really no two ways about it. It's a black and white issue. You're involved in the murder of innocent people in order to facilitate the convenience of other people and to build your own political careers. And on Judgment Day, you will be held to account, because every innocent life is of value to the living God who imparted that life to that particular person. And you're not going to be able to create laws and have lawyers come on Judgment Day when you fall into the hands of the living God and he holds you to account for what you did to and for the least of his children. On that day, you'll need an advocate. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz won't be there. No, John Kerry won't be there. Cecile Richards won't be there. Planned Parenthood won't be there. It will just be you and the living God who holds the fate of your eternal soul in his hand. And you will have to give an account for every idle word. And on that day, you will find out, no matter what you thought, no matter what you thought you could get away with, you'll find out that God said that every one of them was a person and that you had no right to take their life. And so I encourage you, if you are a progressive, feel-good, pro-choice liberal, that you repent before you fall into the hands of the living God, because it is a fearful thing. To do so quickly, I want to go through reasons 885 and 884 to get or keep your children out of the government schools in no particular order. First, Columbus City Schools had a Spanish language class over at East High School, and they put the class in the hands of a long-term substitute who did not know Spanish. And so there's one reason to get your kids out. They might have a Spanish teacher who doesn't speak Spanish, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. This teacher, because she didn't know Spanish and didn't know what to do, she ended up showing the students a graphic movie containing sex and violence. The teacher was actually arrested and sentenced to 90 days in jail. Yes, convicted of 4 counts of disseminating matter harmful to juveniles. Yes, that's the movie with the sex and violence. And that's just one of the things she delivered to kids, because kids in the public schools every day are being overwhelmed with material that is harmful. And that's why I need to get them out. Reason number 800, that was 885. This is 884. A student at a New Jersey elementary school plunged to his death from a second story window in what police are investigating as a suicide. NBC News in New York reports that a fifth grader at Grant Elementary got into a dispute with a classmate during a game of chess. Well, the boy passed his classmate a note, then went to the window, opened it, and jumped to his death. And there were other students in the classroom who witnessed the whole thing. The school actually let out at its normal time, but some parents chose to take their children home early that day, seeing as someone had plunged to their death. So reason number 884 to get or keep your kids out of the government schools, they may be led to believe that suicide is a legitimate alternative to solve a problem. We'll be right back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Doug McBurney here, coming to you from deep within the bowels of a very descript building, the new McBurney compound, coming to you from the boiler room. Yes, any of you who've ever done any phone sales might be familiar with that term, boiler room. I had a brief experience with an outfit that sold investments in alleged oil drilling operations. Alleged. And we worked out of what they called the boiler room. And you had to make a call every 30 seconds unless you got someone on the line. And it was a meat grinder. And you were trying to sell hapless individuals $50,000 shares in a drilling operation. And I did it for about a month, and then I just couldn't do it anymore. So I've done my fair share of work in the boiler room, but I prefer this type of work in the boiler room, setting America straight about the news of the day. And speaking of straight, I'm going to have to dive into the file that my extremely attractive audio engineer finds the most repulsive, because it deals with various deviants and perverts, but it simply has to be reported, because ABC Television has a channel called ABC Family. Are you folks familiar with this? It used to be called the Christian Broadcasting Network, with Christian in quotation marks, because it was run by Pat Robertson, whose Christianity has always been, up for debate, at least in my circle. What with the healings and the lay your hand on the TV. Was he the guy with the diamond mines? Was it Pat Robertson with the diamond mines in Africa? I forget. Anyway, he sold the Christian Broadcasting Network to Disney in 2001, and then they eventually changed it to ABC Family. And Robertson's Goofball 700 Club show still runs on the network, probably part of some grandfather clause. So he continues to embarrass the entire Christian community by broadcasting the 700 Club on ABC Family. But listen to what ABC Family is up to. By the way, they have the word family in their title. They have a television drama called, what's it called here? It's called The Fosters. And they say, according to Breitbart, they made television history last week featuring the youngest ever homosexual kiss between two teenage boys. Yeah, the characters are both 13 years old. And the show's creator tweeted his excitement at the scene immediately following the broadcast. The show's creator is a fellow named Peter Page, and he's famous apparently for a show called Queer as Folk, which is another homosexually oriented television show. According to Breitbart, ABC says the Fosters are a diverse group of children, both biological and adopted, whom an interracial lesbian couple cares for. This is what passes for entertainment on ABC Family. The word family in the title, by the way, that leads a lot of hapless, moronic parents to believe that it's safe for the kids to watch. And if the kids were watching last week, they saw two 13-year-old boys kiss each other. The watchdog group 1 Million Moms has boycotted the show. If you have members in your organization whom you have to tell that they shouldn't watch this show, your organization is failing, 1 Million Moms. This should be mocked and ridiculed from the outside. You shouldn't be concerned about your members watching ABC Family. Anybody who watches ABC Family, well, you've just failed to reach them. Let's just put it that way. The 1 Million Moms says, obviously ABC has lost their minds. They think this material is acceptable content for a family show? Well, of course they think that. Have you seen what's become of Disney in the past few years, 1 Million Moms? Please. Anyway, the co-executive producer previously described the show as portraying a new kind of family. And the homosexual co-producer believes that this is reflective of the world today. And the thing about these deviant perverts in the entertainment media is it's not reflective of the world today until they start pumping it into our houses for years and years, And then it becomes reflective of the world today because people see this kind of garbage and it affects how they act. Let's see, ABC, yeah, whatever. All right. So the creators of the show were called out by 1 million moms and others who are foolish enough to think that ABC doesn't know what they're doing and that they've lost their minds. Peter Page is the proud, open homosexual who created the show. And he said, well, he was asked, you know, people are saying that this is out of bounds. This is not family-oriented. This is not good. What do you say, Peter? And he says, quote, "If people want to judge it, I think maybe they should watch it. Watch and see how carefully and delicately and chastely it was handled. We are not here to sensationalize or exploit anyone. It took two full seasons to build up to this one very simple but very important moment." I'm sorry. See, I've offended my extremely attractive audio engineer. This guy gets excited by this, making two 13-year-old actors do this. This guy should be arrested. This should be illegal, what he did to these two 13-year-old boys. And then to put it on tape and broadcast it. Anyway, the creators, the executive producers, discussed how they prepared the young actors for their on-screen. Okay, I can't go any further with that. Both the producers say this is from The Wrap, which is some Hollywood online rag. They both say that they're homosexuals and they wish they'd been able to see this stuff when they were 13. They said, "It was time to see this. It's important to put this up for the world. Everyone to see. We're here to tell stories of what it is to grow up as a young, potentially gay person. And we want to make sure that if they're potentially gay, we want them to be gay." There's a term for it in the pedophile community. It's called grooming. You start exposing kids to deviant behavior. And kids don't know that they can be convinced that it's normal, you pervert bastards. These guys should be arrested, and they should be in jail right now awaiting trial. I can't read any more of that. I apologize, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. So out of the marriage file now, we have from Thailand, the first... I apologize in advance. You may want to leave the room. Three homosexual men from Thailand have married one another in the first three-way homosexual marriage. The three blushing grooms... Okay, that's it. I can't go any further with it. I cannot do any more. I can't quote them. It's just too disgusting. But the Daily Mail reports that homosexual marriages are not recognized as legitimate under Thai law. But the three men were able to marry each other under Buddhist law, which apparently in Buddhism, well, whatever, anything goes. I think that's why a lot of deviant drug addicts and perverts, they choose Buddhism. Because I think you can do pretty much anything as long as you don't think you're hurting anyone. Yes. It's not a lie, Jerry, if you believe it. And so if you don't think you're hurting anyone, Buddha's okay with that. And so Buddhism is a very convenient religion for deviants and child molesters and perverts and the homosexuals who want to marry two or three or other people. It's just disgusting. All right, so I can't do... I want to thank... my other brother, Daryl, I think, for sending me that story. Actually, I want to rebuke my other brother, Daryl. Tell him, don't send me that stuff anymore. It's too disgusting. Oh, no, but we do appreciate his assistance here. So now we'll move into the politics file, where Ben Carson has taken the mark. He has bowed his knee at the altar of the gay mafia, and he said he now supports... Well, let's just read it here from CNS News. In a Facebook post following his interview with CNN, Dr. Ben Carson, a Republican presidential hopeful, issued a statement apologizing for saying that people who change their sexual orientation after going to jail shows that being gay is a choice. I actually heard this interview, And I thought, this guy's a neurosurgeon? And he's going to use just the whole thing was just kind of embarrassing, just as a human being, to hear him say that, well, some men go into jail straight and they come out gay. And I thought, well, I don't think that happens, Ben. I think some men might go into jail and they might have things happen to them and they might even do things that they wouldn't normally do. But I don't think, I just don't think that's what I would have said, Ben. Anyway, he said that being homosexual is a choice, which I do agree with that. I would have said it differently. But now he says, I realize that my choice of language does not reflect fully my heart on gay issues. So here's the thing, people. As soon as you use the word gay to describe homosexuals and deviants and the perverts, as soon as you give them that word, you've basically capitulated the argument. You're using their vernacular. And you're already, so right there, as soon as he says gay, I can't vote for this guy for president. They should be called homos or homosexuals. And that's the only acceptable terminology in my economy, frankly. But Ben Carson now says, I do not pretend to know how every individual came to their sexual orientation. I regret that my words to express that concept were harmful and divisive, and I apologize unreservedly to all that were offended. Yeah. CNS News had previously reported that Carson, they took go into the whole prison thing. He says, I'm a doctor. I work at the finest institution of medical knowledge in the world, and up until this point, there have been no definitive studies that people are born to a specific sexuality. Oh, really? You know why, Ben? Is because nobody studied a question as ludicrous as that. Everybody knows that that sexual orientation is a choice. Everybody knows it. Nobody studied it because for 5,000 years, we knew it. Well, there were a few times in history when we questioned it, but that was only for brief periods of time before the collapse of empires. All the other time, we just knew it, Ben. We knew that there were perverts and deviants, and we called them sinners, and we called it a sin. But you can't do that anymore if you want to be president, apparently. And what does Ben say about homosexuals? Well, we are all made in God's image. That's applying a bit of a too of broad of a brush, Mr. Carson. While you may be an intelligent neurosurgeon, you're certainly no theologian, because God is not a conflicted pervert. No, God is a healthy male, or at least masculine, and he's not a conflicted homosexual pervert. And so while fundamentally, you could say that every human being is made in God's image, to imply that God's okay with that, well, I guess, again, that just proves that Ben is no theologian. Oh, and now he says, I support civil unions for gay couples. Civil issues like same-sex marriage should be left up to the states. All right, get out of here, Ben. You're done. You'll never be the president because you're too wishy-washy. And I think maybe the only person who could save us as president, I mean in a human sense, in an earthly sense, in the presidency, I think we probably need a good solid, well, maybe not a theologian, but just a good solid preacher. Why don't you grow up? It's the Weekly Review. I'm your host,
Doug McBurney.
Oh, yeah. So glad to be back here in studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Very feminine. Very feminine woman, by the way. Sitting alongside her manly man. Yes. All right, now one more, if you can tolerate it. And then after this, I'll stop with the avalanche of homos pouring out of the closet all over America and all over all of us. It's disgusting. I feel like you need a shower. But Barack Obama was in Selma over the weekend commemorating the historic march in Selma for civil rights, right? We all saw it. I watched it, but I did not see this. And I can honestly say that when I heard about this at church this morning, I was actually shocked because I didn't think even Barry had the, I'm not sure what to call it. I'm not sure Barry was so dedicated to the advancement of the homosexualist movement that he would do what he did in Selma. I've just got a couple of portions from his speech that I want to repeat. That he gave this speech in Selma, Alabama, on the 60th anniversary of the march. And here's what he said. Quote, "Where are the slaves who built the White House? Where are the cowboys who opened up the West? And the laborers who laid rail and raised skyscrapers and organized for workers' rights?" Okay, now right there, where he brings up the organizing for worker rights, that I can understand because he's a community organizer. And organizing for workers' rights, to him, is the equivalent of putting a man on the moon. So I can at least comprehend why Barry would include community organizers in a speech. I find it inappropriate, by the way, to compare paper hangers and community organizers to people who marched into gunfire and dogs and water cannons in order to get equal rights, okay? I think it's inappropriate, but I can at least understand. But Barry went on. "Where are the fresh-faced GIs who fought to liberate a continent? The Tuskegee Airmen and the Navajo Code Talkers?" All right, now there, I've just got to say, no, Barry, you're really not. You're not even in the same league with the GIs who fought to liberate a continent. You're not even on the same level with the Tuskegee Airmen or the Navajo Code Talkers. All right, but I can understand that because Barry is a politician. And politicians build themselves up by aggrandizing themselves in the glory of other people. That's what politicians do. So at least I can comprehend it. I'm offended by it. I find it distasteful, but I can understand. And then Barry went on. "Where are the firefighters who rushed into those buildings on 9-1-1? Where are the gay Americans whose blood ran in the streets of San Francisco and New York just as blood ran down this bridge?" He said. So in the same sentence with the first responders at 9-11, and the freedom marchers in Selma, he has to inject the homosexualists. Now that I cannot comprehend. I can't believe he did that. So as a 9-11 first responder, as a fireman, as an American, as someone who marched in the civil rights movement, I would be personally offended to be lumped in with the queers. But he did it. And he did it right there in front of God and everybody. Right there on the bridge in Selma. It's unbelievable. Anyway, Barack Obama is unsalvageable, on his way to hell with jet rockets, and I don't think there's anything or anyone that can ever reach him for good. He's a goner, in my opinion. And so my only prayer for Barack Obama is that his office be taken from him and given to another. That's the only thing I pray for him. That's all. Well, you can call me a pessimist if you want. You can say that I'm not being Christian because I'm not exercising Christian love. But, you know, the Bible says in Romans that at some point God gives them up to uncleanness. And so I'm giving him up, that's all. And it should have been obvious to everyone when he was in the Illinois Senate 10 years ago what this guy was. But there you have it. Not to go too much on Barack Obama, because it really is just stating the obvious. But I found it shocking that he lumped all these heroic figures in with a bunch of queers who basically started a riot at a gay bar and threw bottles at the cops. It's just unbelievable. All right. But, you know, this is that, by the way, yeah, that was out of our rewriting our history file. You remember how Michelle Obama said we're going to have to rewrite our history? She actually said that. And people thought it was a slip of the tongue, but apparently not. Now, if you were at Stonewall smoking a joint and threw a vodka bottle at a cop, you're just like one of the first responders at 9/11, or you might as well be Martin Luther King. Unbelievable. Well, that's where we are. All right, now let's go to the war file quickly. Running out of time. But this is just what's going on in Nigeria. It doesn't cease to shock me day by day when I hear what's happening over there with Boko Haram. So this past week, a crowd suspected that a teenage girl was a suicide bomber because she did not want to be searched at the local vegetable market. There have been a spate of suicide bombings in Nigeria orchestrated by Boko Haram, in which they have used girls as young as 10 years old as suicide bombers. So a young teenage girl goes to the vegetable market. She objects to being searched. And the crowd seized her, beat her to death, put a tire around her neck and set it on fire. This is a young teenage girl. Fox in New York reports that it's doubtful that the girl was actually a bomber, as she did not detonate any explosive when she was set on fire. Police in Nigeria described her as the victim of a mob action carried out by an irate crowd. So Boko Haram has been using 10-year-old girls as suicide bombers, and police there say they say it's unclear whether such girls detonate the explosive themselves or whether the bombs are controlled remotely. These are the fanatics that will bring us back into the dark ages, 1,000 years of darkness, if this isn't stomped out. Just horrifying. We'll move now to something not nearly as important. Edward Snowden is currently residing in Russia, and he says he'd like to move to Switzerland, he says. Yeah, imagine that. You're in Moscow. It's early March. You'd like to move to... Yeah, of course, Edward. Yeah, he's made a public appeal for Switzerland to grant him asylum. He says, I think Switzerland would be a sort of great political option because it has a history of neutrality. A history of neutrality. Edward Snowden thinks he's neutral. And here's the thing about neutrality. It's an illusion. There's no such thing as neutrality. You may not be on either particular side, but you do take a side. Yes. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. As Neil Peart wrote, I'm sure in a drunken haze back in the early 1980s. But he's been through rehab now. He's doing quite well. He's doing all right. Snowden reiterates that he says the United States has not offered him a fair trial. Yeah, the State Department, he says, is unwilling to agree to give him a fair trial. And see, he doesn't want them. They say they'll be neutral and they will give him a fair trial. But he insists that if there's any chance he'll be found guilty, that's not fair. Because that's Edward Snowden's definition of neutrality, is you have to be on my side. he says the only thing the State Department has said at this point is that they will not execute me, which he says is not the same as a fair trial, which that's a true enough statement. Why they would not execute you, I don't understand, Mr. Snowden, and why a drone has not already dropped a missile through your hotel in Moscow. Well, I know why that hasn't happened. It's because Barack Obama is afraid of Vladimir Putin, and he wets himself whenever he sees a picture of Putin. Otherwise, he might have done what was right and drone struck Ed Snowden. Yeah, living in Russia, it's not exactly all it was cracked up to be, huh, Ed? Let's see. We also have here, let's see, do I want to do that? Or do, oh, okay. From Detroit, Michigan, WJBK reports, that's Fox in Detroit, that a federal judge was shot outside his home in northwest Detroit last week. Terrence Berg is the judge in question. Let's see here. He was nominated to the bench, the district judge to the federal bench, by Barack Obama. And let's see, anything else? Oh, unfortunately, his injuries are considered non-life-threatening. Yeah, so that's all we have on that. No further update as to whether or not that particular judge is going to be okay. Apparently, he is going to be okay, and we're sorry to report that. But let's move on now. We're going to go into the culture file for what I found to just be an interesting story. I mean, I spend a lot of my time making fun of people and deriding people and mocking politicians and questioning the sanity of people on this show. And I have a lot of fun with that. But I thought this story was actually touching. And so I wanted to close with this. As you hear, is the music coming up? Yeah, we had a lot of technical difficulties last week. Let me hear that. Yeah, there it is. So I had to repair that. Yeah. Our digital audio file system, it went haywire last week. And it started just erasing files. And since we're using a format that has, well, it's fallen out of favor since the late 1990s. If we lose our files, we're probably going to have to spend $1,000 over at iTunes to try to recover it and then move into the 21st century, which we're not that anxious to do. That's all. But I found this story to be touching. From Tokyo, the Associated Press reports that the world's oldest person has just turned 117. Misao Okawa had just celebrated her 117th birthday. She was born March 5th, 1898, and was recognized as the world's oldest person by the Guinness Book of World Records back in 2013. She's one of the longest reigning world's oldest people. Better than a year, which is impressive on that list. So she was asked about the secret to her longevity. And she said, you know, I wonder about that myself. Which is just encouraging for those of us who don't focus that intensely on longevity and trying to be as healthy as we can and live as long as we can. Some of us, we're just winging it out here. And apparently, Misao Okawa has been winging it for 117 years, and I'm just glad to hear that. It just gives me some hope that I might last a little longer than I deserve to last. Now, she was also asked how she felt about living for 117 years. And her answer was, quote, it has seemed rather short, unquote. It has seemed rather short. That really touched me, because I think no matter how long we dwell on this earth in these mortal coils, that at the end of the day, when we look back on all we've been through and everything we've done and everyone we've known, I think we're going to say, my, that was short. And so consider eternity and consider the living God and the truth that has been revealed to us through his son, Jesus Christ, because that will not be short. That will go on. Well, for quite some time, as a matter of fact, for all eternity. In fact, you will exist forever. The question is, do you want to live forever? Because if you want to live forever, then you have to go with God, because only God can carry you through to eternity. And that is it for the Weekly Worldview this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and TheologyOnline.com. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.